Today's shiur is Masechti Ksuvas Daf Mem Gimel, and we will begin on Daf Mem Gimel Amud Aleph, 6 lines from the top. Baminei Rav Avinu Mirav Sheshes. And as Tosfos, with the help of the Pnei Yeshua, help us understand this Gemara. The halacha is that a father supports his daughters, and in return for that support, any earnings that the daughter makes go to the father. Of course, this is referring to a girl who is a nara or ktana. However, in the ksuba of every husband is included that the father says, if he is to pass away and leave over daughters, the daughters should be continued to be supported from his estate. That means that even though the daughters are not yorshim, they're not heirs of the father, they are still to be supported from the estate. And the Gemara's question will now be, how do we view that stipulation in the Ksuba? Do we view that stipulation in the Ksuba as a continuation of the situation that existed while the father was alive? And just like when the father was alive, he supported the daughter, but in return he received her earnings. Does the same continue after he dies, or is this a new situation? But again, as Tosfos emphasizes, while the father is alive, the obligation to support and return and get the earnings is midaraisa. There's certainly no question that midaraisa, there is no obligation for this situation to continue, the brother supporting and receiving her earnings. The question is, what is the halacha only midrabbanan? Bas hanizonis min achim, a daughter who is receiving support from the state of her father. Mas yidel lemi, who is entitled to the earnings? Do we say b'mokem av kaimi? Do we say that the brothers take over the place of their father? Ma hosam mas yidel lo'av, just like when her father was alive, as we just described, her father receives her earnings. Here too, the brothers are entitled to her earnings. Or maybe it's not the same, and hosam mididei mitzina, because the father is supporting her from his own earnings, from his own money, and therefore he's entitled to receive her earnings in return. Hocha, however, the brothers who are supporting her, lav miditu mitzana, are not supporting her from their own money. They're supporting her from the money that they inherited from the father, and therefore she's not obligated to turn over her earnings to her father. There's a machlokes achrayim, if the father could even force his daughter to go work so that she should turn over her earnings to him. But certainly that would not be the case by brothers. Amalek, Rav Shesha says, Tenisua, we learned in a braisa. The braisa says, Amana nizonis minichsi yisayimim, so too is included in the ksuba that the widow receives support from the estate. However, umas yudea shalahen, they are entitled to her earnings. So the Gemara is saying that just like a stipulation of the ksuba entitles the widow to support, but also requires that she turn over her earnings, the same is by the daughter. Says the Gemara, it's not similar. Midami, amana lanichle ba'avacha. Regarding his widow, he doesn't necessarily want that she should become rich off his estate. Bitai, on the other hand, nichle baravachi, is prepared that she should have the money that she earns kept. And as the Mefarshim explained, this girl is obviously an unmarried girl, and the father is anxious, even though he's no longer unfortunately here, he's anxious that the girl should be able to continue to live and get married. And obviously, if she'll have more assets available to her, she'll find it easier to find a chassan. And that's why it could very well be that the father specifically wants that although his estate is supporting her, she should keep her earnings, so she should be a more of an attractive kala to find a chassan. And this works very well, says the Pnei Yeshua, with the way the Pnei Yeshua helped us understand the Gemara Shaila, that we're trying to understand what did the father want. Says the Gemara, based on this understanding, lememra the bita adifalei malmanasai. What we're saying is that the father is more concerned about his daughter than he is about his almana. Ask the Gemara, v'amar Rav Abba and Rav Yossi, also almana etzel abbas, Chazal treated an almana in comparison to the daughter, kibas etzel achim, just like a daughter is treated compared to her brothers. B'nechasim atim, when there is a very small estate. The halacha is that, as we said at the beginning of our shir, sons inherit a father, daughters do not. However, as we also said, daughters are entitled to be supported from their father's estate. And the Gemara, as we will learn later in our Masechtim, Mitzashem, discusses a situation where a father left over a very small estate, and there isn't enough in the estate for the sons and the daughters to be supported, for the sons to get Yerusha and the daughters to be supported. So the halacha is that, as we will learn in a moment, that the daughter's support takes precedence over the son, and therefore the daughters get supported, even though it means that the sons have nothing that they will have to actually go collect from tzedakah to survive if they're small nechassim. What is the definition of a small nechassim? Machloikus rishonim. Some rishonim say that we look at what isn't there for a year, what's the projection, the financial projection for a year. Others say that we look at the needs of the girls until they become bageris. Ma'abas etzlachim, says the Gemara, just like a daughter and son, habas nezoinus, and if this very small estate, the daughter gets supported from the state. Va'achim yishalu al psachim, and the brothers go collecting from tzedakah. Af amona etzla bas, so too if there's a widow and a daughter left over, amona nezoinus, the amona gets supported from the estate. Va'abas tishal psachim. So we see from here that there's more of a concern about the honor of an almana versus the honor of a daughter. And therefore, given a choice, or given the situation where there's a very small estate, we're more worried about the wife, that she shouldn't have to collect more than the daughter. Yet our Gemara, a moment ago, said that the father is more concerned about the daughter than he is about the wife. The Rishonim discuss, how do we determine what is considered a small estate that the widow has the first amount of money for her support? The Rishonim that say that we evaluate a small estate by a year's support take the same approach here. We look at the amount of support for a year. However, the Ramah quotes a Ramban. Sounds like they were actuaries then. We try to figure out how long is this amana expected to live, and we also try to calculate how much support, how much will she need to live out those years, and that's the amount of money that is first set aside for the amana, and afterwards we take care of the daughters and the sons. Tosfos interestingly indicates the following. The way most Rishonim learn, and that's Pasha Peshat in the Gemara, that if someone died, he left a widow, he left daughters, he left sons, the first concern we have is for the support of the widow, then our next concern is for the support of the daughters, and the rest goes to the sons, for the support of the sons, the Yerusha of the sons. Tosfos, however, seems to indicate that this halacha, that we are concerned about the widow, is only in a situation where there were sons, daughters, and widow. And he explains as follows. Midoraisa, a son is a Yorish. Midoraisa, a daughter is a Yairish, albeit a son comes before a daughter. So therefore, in a situation where there's a small estate, and we're pushing it from the son to the daughter, who are both Yorshim Midaraisa, we can continue and push it further and say that the Amana gets first. However, in a situation, says Taisus, where there's only sons and an Almana, or there are only daughters and an Almana, if we take the Yerusha from the son to the wife, to the widow, or from the daughter to the widow, we're not going from someone who's a Yairish to someone who's a not, to another Yairish. We're going from a Yairish to a non-Yairish, because with a Raisa, an Almana is never a Yairish. There, the Gemara does not suggest that the wife would be supported. But again, our question, the Gemara's question is, we said before that the father is more concerned about his daughters than his widow, yet here we see that the husband's more concerned about his widow than he is about his daughters. Answers the Gemara. Linyan zilusa, when it comes to being degraded, having to have to go collect staka, amana adifale, he's more concerned about his amana. Linyan harvacha, when it comes to having money, so to speak, in the bank, beita adifale, he wants more, he's more concerned about his daughter. And as the Mefarshim explain, ishtai kigufai, a wife is like himself. So if his widow has to collect, it's like he has to collect. That's why that is very bothersome to him. However, what's in her bank account, that's not as degrading, and there he's not so concerned. Another pshat that I saw is from the Sefer Chaver ben Chaim. He was a Talmud of the Chassam Sofer. He says as follows. He says, a husband does not want his wife to get remarried. However, if he leaves nothing for her to live off, to get supported, she's not going to have a choice but to get remarried. So therefore, he wants her to first be supported to avoid her getting remarried. But as far as having money in the bank, there he's more concerned about his daughter than his wife. From here, the Paiskim also tell us, we see how important it is to know and follow what the person who passed away wanted. Here we see HaChazal identified what this father who was Nifta wanted in terms of supporting his Amana, in terms of supporting his daughters, and we have to try to get them in the order that the father wanted to fulfill his wishes. Masa Rabbi Yosef asks Rabbi Yosef to this question from our Mishnah, to this halacha, regarding this halacha, we bring a raya to this shaila from our Mishnah. It says in our Mishnah, Masa Yada Mitziyasa, what she earned and she found, Afa Pishalai Gafsa, even though she did not yet collect them, Mesa Av, and then her father dies, Arein Shalachim. As we explained in the Mishnah, if the daughter earned wages, even though she didn't actually collect those wages prior to her father's death, they considered that they were already his, and therefore when she collects them after he dies, they go to the father's estate, to the brothers who are the father's Yarshim. What do we see from the Mishnah? Why are the brothers, when are the brothers receiving those wages? Tamar the Bechaya Av, because they were produced while the father was alive. Halacha Mises Av, we see from our Mishnah that wages that were earned by this girl after her father dies, La'atzma, go to her, do not go to her brothers. Now, my life, isn't our Mishnah referring to a situation, B'nizoynis, where she's being supported by her brothers, and yet the Mishnah is telling us that she keeps the wages? Says the Gemara, Loi, our Mishnah is referring to a situation, B'nizoynis, where she's not being supported, and that's why the wages are kept by herself. Ask the Gemara, if our Mishnah is referring to a situation where she's not being supported, Maila Memra, what's the Shaila? Of course she keeps the wages. There's no need for our Mishnah to teach us that then. Because a Filaman the Omer, according as we're going to learn in Masechta Kedushin, Yochel Harav Loimel Evid, a master could tell his Evid Kanani, Asay Imi V'ein Izoncha, work, but I won't support you. Hani mili be'evet kanani. That's only regarding evet kanani, the like be'imcha, where the Torah doesn't use the words ki toiv loy imcha, that he has to have a good life with you. Avel evet ivri, by regarding an evet ivri, the ksibe imcha, where the Torah says the words ki toiv loy imcha, we have to treat the evet ivri well. Loy, there certainly a master cannot develop some sort of an arrangement. I'll support you. I want you to work for me, but I won't support you. Certainly, says the Gemara, Kosh Ken Bitoy. So if our Mishnah is referring to a situation where the brothers are not supporting her, there's certainly no need for our Mishnah to teach us that they aren't entitled to her wages. She's certainly no worse than an Eved Ivri. Says the Gemara, Amar Rav Bar Ula Loy Nitzcha La Adofa. Our Mishnah is regarding the surplus income. As we explain, the halacha is that if they want, they don't have to, the girl does not have to turn over her wages to her father, and the father doesn't have to support her. But let's say the girl has surplus income above what she needs to live, that the father is entitled to. And the Mishnah is teaching us that that hadafa that goes to the father does not go to the brother, the brothers are not entitled to it. There's an interesting Me'iri that says that even though the halacha is that the hadafa goes to the father, that is only after we're certain that the girl has no need for that surplus income. Because let's say a girl is earning income and then she has surplus, but we can never be sure what the tomorrow brings, and maybe she'll need that income. Our Mishnah that says that the hadafa goes to the father is only after we're certain that the father doesn't need, that the girl will not need that surplus. Amar Rava, Gavra Rabbi Krav Yosef, asked the Gemara, such a great person as Rav Yosef, La Yoda de Ik Hadafa, is certainly aware of the halacha of hadafa. So the Kamais of Tiftus, why is he asking questions for our Mishnah? Our Mishnah is obviously referring to hadafa. I cannot be a proof to our Shaila. Elam Rava, Rav Yosef Masnisin Kishisa Gufa Kashle. The Rav Yosef had a problem with what our Mishnah taught us. The Tani, the Mishnah said, Mas Yida Mitziyasa, what the father earned, what the girl earns and what she finds, Af Pishloi Gafsa, even though she didn't collect it, still, even though she didn't collect it before the father passed away, after the father passes away, goes to the father's estate. So, on wages, we can understand the words collected. A person can earn wages, but not yet have collected them. However, as the Gemara, mitziyos man gavya. What is this terminology of collecting a mitziyah? A mitziyah is something that you find. You can't collect something that you find. The Mishnah must be saying the following, that we compare Masiyadeo Kimitsiyasa. We compare her earnings to like something she finds. Ma Matsiyasa Bechaya Avlav, just like anything she finds during her father's lifetime belongs to her father. Because the halach is the Chazal established that anything a girl finds should belong to the father to avoid Eva, to avoid a situation where the father and the daughter won't get along. Teaches us the Mishnah, Lachem Mises Av, go La'atzma. But after the father dies, so there's no longer concern of Eva between the father and the daughter. And that's when it goes to herself. Avmas Yedah Nami, so too regarding the girl's earnings, teaches us the Mishnah. Bechaya Av, as long as the father is alive, La'av, those earnings go to the father. However, La'acham Mitzav, after the father dies, they go La'atzma Shmaminon. This is a clear proof that the earnings belong to her, even if she's supported from their estate, and they don't go to the brothers. Drushash asks, perhaps Pshat in our Mishnah when it says, the Gemara asks, Mitzios V'man Gavya, perhaps the case is referring to a situation that she found a Mitziah while her father was still alive. However, there was a din Torah. Did she find it? Did somebody else find it? And that the din Torah only rendered their decision after the father died. And that's Pshat Gavya, that there was a din Torah. She was claiming that the Mitziah belongs to her. Says the Rishash, that would not be a situation where she collected the money after the father died. because actually that mitzvah was already hers before the father died. There was just a lack of clarity. There was a need for clarification. Is it hers or not? But it was certainly hers from when the father was alive. That would not be considered a situation that was only collected after the father died. It manamim continues the Gemara, so too do we learn. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Marav, Bas HaNezonis Menachem, a daughter that's being supported from the estate, Mas Yudel Atzma, her support, the earnings belong to her. Amar of Kahana Maitama, what's the reason? Says the Gemara, because the Pasuk says, Vesnachaltem Oisem Levnechem, the Pasuk says that Avodim are to be given over as an inheritance to one's children. The Avadim, your daughters, and the rights to your daughters are not given over to your children. Magid, this comes to teach us that the rights that one has in his daughters are not passed an inheritance to one's sons. Maskovla, Rava, asks Rava, Vema Pita Akbas, the Knossos, the Chavolos, Akos Medaber. Perhaps the Pasik is referring to a situation where the girl was seduced, or she deserves a Knas, or she was injured, and the Pasik is saying that those payments, although they belong to the father, don't go to the son. Became Taner of Chanina, and so did Rav Chanina explain. Perhaps the pasuk is referring Bita Apnas veKnosos veChavolos Hakos Medaber. So the Gemara stops. Chavolos. Is there any way of explaining that the Chavolos should go to the Yarshim? The Chavolos Tzara de Gufaninu belong to the person who was belongs to the girl herself. So as the Mefarshim explained, the Gemara is not really changing its question. The Gemara is just saying that we're trying to redefine the pasuk of "Vesnachaltem Oisem Levnechem Achreichem," and saying that that pasuk is not necessarily referring to her earnings. Maybe it's referring to some other types of payments. And the Gemara identified a number of types of payments: Peter Abnas, Kit Knossos, Chavolos. So the Gemara, Chavolos shouldn't really be one of those payments that are identified, because Chavolos certainly don't go to the son, because they don't even go to the father, because Chavolos Atzara the Guf Ninu, they're considered something that she's suffering, and therefore she deserves those payments, not a father, and certainly not his estate. Although Tosfos does point out that even though the Gemara is very clear that the father and the estate are not entitled to the Chavolos, it is very clear, says Tosfos, that unemployment, that if she was injured and cannot go to work, that certainly belongs to the father, because if he's entitled to her earnings, he's also entitled to unemployment payments for not being able to work. I'm Rabbi Yossi Rav Chanina. When the Gemara was speaking about Chavolos, what it meant was Shapatza Bafanel, where she received a wound in her face, which depreciates her value, and if the father were alive, that would be given to him, because he has the right to sell her. Now that she was depreciated with this wound, she's less attractive for sale, and therefore the Gemara is saying that the Chavolos that the Gemara says goes to the father but doesn't go to the son. The Gemara actually doesn't respond to this challenge. Explains the Mashal that obviously the Amoraim who hold that the sons do not receive the girl's income also will hold that none of the rights, it's not just the earnings that don't go to her, none of the money that she gets on any fashion goes to her, and therefore the Gemara didn't even bother responding to that. Nothing goes to the brothers. Says the Gemara, Amar Reb Zeira Amar Amas Namarav Vamrilei Amar Reb Zeira Amar Amas Namarav. And it's interesting to note, as Rashi and the Rishonim point out, we have many times in Shas where different Amoraim are mentioned, and we know the Gemara is very careful to mention exactly who said what. But here, in both versions, it's Reb Zeira. So what's the difference? So the Mefarshim point out, Rashi says, that it was indeed one and the same individual. But Reb Zeira and Rebbe Zeira Rav Zeira is when he still lived in Bavel, and he did not yet have smicha. And Rebbe Zeira is after he moved out to Israel and received smicha, and he got the name Rebbe, and it's one and the same person. Other Rishonim indeed learned that Rav Zeira and Rebbe Zeira are not the one and the same person. But especially according to Rashi's Pshat, points out the Bnei Yisachar, we see how careful Chazal were to mention exactly who said what, and not just to rely on inaccurate information. Bnei Yisachar goes on to explain how we find so many times Chazal were careful not only to mention the name of the person who said something, but where he lived and where he said what he said. So they said, Bas HaNezonis Min Achim, a daughter supported off the estate from her brothers, Masi Del Atzmai, keeps her own earnings. The Ksiv, Es Nachaltam Oysel of Nechem Achreichem, Oysel of Nechem, only the Avodim Knanim are passed in Yerusha, not daughters are passed on Yerusha. Magid, Shein Odom Moiris Chospitil of Noi, this is not sent on as Yerusha. Amrei Avimi Bar Papi, and so said Avimi Bar Papi, Shokit Amrei. Who's the one that said this? It was Shokit. Shokit, man, who is that? Shmuel. It's Shmuel. Why is he called Shokit? So the Mefarshim give a number of pshat. One is, as Rashi said, he was always careful in the Divrei Torah that he said, and that's why, in fact, the halacha follows Shmuel in Hilchus Mominus, the most difficult area of halacha, because he's always so careful in what he said. Others say Shokit is because he was a Shokit, he was a Masmid. And yet I saw another pshat from the Shalos Tshuvos, Chavos Yoyer, that he's called Shokit because he, the pasuk regarding the menorah says that the menorah was Meshukadim, they were decorated. Shmuel was so beautiful, he was decorated with different Torah, that he was called Shokit. Ask the Gemara, Shokut manu, who is Shokut Shmuel? Ask him, Harav Amra. We know that this halacha was said by Rav. How are you attributing it to Shmuel? Says the Gemara, I am Af Shokut Amra. It was said both by Rav and by Shmuel. Omar Mabar Meima L'Rav Ashi, Hochi Amra Hadoi. This is what Hadoi said. Hilchus Kavasei Rav Sheshus. The halacha is like Rav Sheshus. Rav Ashi Omar, Hilchus Kavasei the Rav. The halacha is like Rav, that the daughter's earnings do not belong to the father, and that indeed is the halacha, Hilchus Kavasei Rav, that even the daughter who's being supported off the estate of the father does not have to turn over her earnings to her brother. We will learn later in our Masechta Shaila, if a girl who has Erisin is already entitled to a ksuba. Rashi says that our Mishnah Gemara is going according to the Manda Omer, that a girl who is Erisin is already entitled to Ksuba. Other Rishonim explain that our Mishnah doesn't necessarily have to follow that opinion. Our Mishnah is referring to a situation where the husband chose to write a Ksuba for his wife, even though it was only Erisin. Says the Mishnah, Amar says, Bitoy, if somebody gives his daughter an Erisin, the Girsha, and then he divorces her prior to the Nisuin, Erisa, this girl again became an Arusa. As we know, in a Jewish marriage, there are two stages, Erisin and Nisuin. In our times, typically they're both done at the same time, but in the time of Chazal, there was an interval between the Erisin and the Nisuin. It says the Mishnah that the ksuba that's given to a girl who had an Erisin and the marriage was terminated after the Erisin belonged to the father. And Mefarshim explain, how do we know? In this halacha, the Meiri says that just like we learned in the previous Gemara that the father is entitled to her earnings, so too is he entitled to her ksuba. Others say that since it's the father who has the right to give his daughter, who's a ktana or nara, in marriage, so since he has the right, certainly he's entitled to the ksuba. The Pnei Yeshua explains, says we learned in the previous parak, k'moyer ha-psulois. The Torah compares the knas to the ksuba, and since we know the knas goes to the father by anusa or mefuta, so too does the ksuba go to the father. And furthermore, the Pnei Yeshua goes on to explain, we learned this from the Hilchus Nedarim, that just like by Hilchus Nedarim we explained, the father, until the girl is in the Suah, still has rights in of being made for Nedarim. That's a proof that the father still has rights in the daughter, and even though that's a situation of Isser, and as we discussed a number of times in the previous parak, Mamon mi Isser loyal pinan, here we see that this is not just a limud of a halacha, it's a concept that the father's rights are retained until she's in the suah. Has siya, and therefore says the Mishnah, if he gave her in the suin, Begirish, and then she was divorced, he see her, and then she was in the su again, when it's Amal and she was widowed, then the halach is ksubasa shalah, the ksuba from both of these marriages belong to her, because once she's in the suah, the marriage belongs to her, the ksuba belongs to her. Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with this halach. He says harishayna, the first ksuba, the ksuba that was written while she was still in the father's house, that ksuba will go to the father. Amalai and the Chacham disagree with them, and they said imishay siya, once the girl is married in the suin and she receives a ksuba, ein lavi rishuspa, her father has no rights, has no jurisdiction, does not receive the ksuba. So the Gemara is medayik in the second case of the Mishnah. The second case of the Mishnah was his siya of an iskarsha, his siya of an isarmala. And the Gemara's question is, why do we have two cases? Why doesn't we have similar siya of an isarmala, siya of an isarmala? Ask the Gemara, tam the siya of a girisha, a siya of an isarmala. She got married and then had a gerishin, and got married and had, and then became almona. Avnus amla trey zimni. But about a situation where she becomes an almona twice is not being mentioned. The reason it's not being mentioned, says the Gemara, because sula chazil and tsubei. Such a girl is no longer deemed able to get remarried. Because agav urcha kasoslam tanik Rebbe, the Gemara is teaching us what Rebbe teaches us in Masechet Yevamos. Dama betray zimni avachazokam. The Gemara Masechet Yevamos speaks about a katlonis, a woman who gets married, and it happened more than once that her husband died. Such a woman may not get married again. And it depends how many times is it a chazakah. If we hold the chazakah is established after two times, a woman who got married twice and husbands died twice would not be allowed to get married a third time. If we say chazakah is three times, so the woman could get married three times before she's no longer allowed to get remarried. We go, since it's a shayla of nefashos, it's a shayla of life and death, we're machmer, we don't allow this woman to get remarried, like Rebbe says, two times. After two times. So that's why our mission is specific to speak about his Siyov and his Armala, Siyov and his Armala, because such a woman would never be allowed to get remarried, and that's what the mission is teaching us. Ask Tosis that halacha, why do we have to make the deek from the Reisha? We could have made the deek from the Sefer of Irsov and his Armala, the Irsov and his Garsha, why didn't say Irsov and his Armala twice? Answers Tosis, as we learned in Masechet Yevamos. The Gemara gives two reasons why a katlonis is not allowed to get remarried. One reason is mayon goyrim. Obviously, having relations with this woman causes her husbands to die. Another pshat is mazla goyrim. She brings bad luck to her husband. Says Tosfos, if the reason is mazla goyrim, so yes, if she was in arusa twice and her husband dies, obviously she's bringing bad fortune to her husband. But if the reason is because of Mayan Goyim having relations, by Erisim they didn't have relations. So to avoid that question, our Mishnah refers to the case of Nisuin, where they had relations, and then both the reason of Mayan Goyim and Mazla Goyim apply. But as Tosfos, according to that, so why did the Mishnah and the Reisha have to mention the case of Erisim and this Armala, Erisim and this Garsha? There could even be Erisim and this Armala twice. According to the Manda Omer, Mayan Goyim, she could still get remarried. So Taisha says the Mishnah wanted to stay consistent with its terminology, and that's why it mentioned the same thing, both in the same cases, both in the Sefer and in the Reisha. The Rishonim also discuss, why did the Mishnah mention the case of Hisiyah v'Niskarsha, Hisiyah v'Niskarsha? So Rishonim saying, this is actually Machlokes Rishonim, that just like the halach is of a woman got married twice, and her husband died, she's not allowed to get remarried a third time, so too is the halacha that if a woman got married twice and got divorced, she's not going to get remarried a third time. That's why the Mishnah specifically did not speak about a siyuv in this garsha. However, this is not the opinion of all Rishonim. There are Rishonim that hold that the halacha does not necessarily agree, not necessarily the same by gerushin as it is by death, and that she is allowed to get married perhaps a third time if she was divorced twice. And according to them, they say that this is something that's not shchiach, that a woman should get divorced twice. That's why the Mishnah did not mention that case. It's important to note that the Pesach can make a number of points. Number one, there's a machlokes rishonim. What will be the halacha if a katlaris did get married when she wasn't supposed to a third time? Does that marriage have to be dissolved or not? The Rosh says that the marriage should be dissolved. Chamira sakanta miyisura. It's a shalav sakanas kafashis. The Rambam disagrees. The marriage does not have to be dissolved. Similarly, the Rambam holds that even though there's a concept, as we're learning, of katlonis, and a woman is not supposed to get married after two times if her husband died, however, says the Rambam, as we learned in Masechta Yevamos, b'makom mitzvah, let's say there's a woman who was married twice and her husband's died and now she fell to Yibum. Since there's a mitzvah of Yibum, the mitzvah of Yibum supersedes the concern of katlonis and she gets remarried. The Chikrei Leiv takes this concept one step further. We've learned in the previous parak that if somebody was ma'anis a woman, the halacha is that that girl, if somebody's ma'anis a woman, that girl has to become the wife of the ma'anis. What would be the halacha if the girl who someone was ma'anis is a girl who was married twice and her husband died twice? Will the mitzvah of Lysia Le'isha still apply? Says the Chikrei Leiv, just like the Rambam says the mitzvah of Yibum supersedes the concern of katlonis, so too does the mitzvah of Loisiyah Le'isha supersede the concern of katlonis. The Pais can go on to say that the issue of katlonis only applies by wives towards their husband, not by men. Also, the Paiskim say that the concern of a katlonis is only when something extraordinary happened. For example, a woman married a man who was healthy and young, and he passes away, and then that happens again. That woman is identified as a katlonis. But let's say a woman married a man who was a sick man before they got married, and then he dies. The Paiskim say she's not considered katlonis. Similarly, if a woman and a man were married, Baruch Hashem, for many years, and he dies because he's an old man, which is the way, unfortunately, the world goes, people pass away, that woman also would not be considered a katlonis. So we learned in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Harishayna Shalav, even if the girl had the suin, the first ksuba belongs to the father. Says the Gemara, my tama, the Rabbi Yehuda, what's the reason for Rabbi Yehuda's opinion? Rav Yosef Dam Tavaya, Hoyel Mishas Erison Zoch Ben Aav, because the Ksuba was written when she was still in Arusa, and as we learned, when she's still in Arusa, she's in the father's Rishus, therefore that Ksuba belongs to the father. Says the Gemara, Mosav Rava, asks Rava, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Harishayna Shalav, the first ksuba belongs to her father. Amai de Rabbi Yehuda, however Rabbi Yehuda agrees, b'ma'aris is bita k'shiktana, if somebody gives his daughter an erison when she's a ktana, a bagra, and then she becomes a begeris, v'akach nosus, and then she has nesuin, shein levi rishuspa, that her father has no jurisdiction over the her, and he doesn't receive the ksuba. But my, ask the Gemara why? Hachanami lema, why not say in the same situation here, Hoyel umishas erison zocha bana'av, since from the time of erison the father became, at the time of erison it went to the father, so isn't that what counts? Eli itmar, hachi itmar. Says the Gemara, this is the way to understand Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. Rav Yoyis, Darmin Tavayu, it's not that erison, well, it's, the main factor is Hoyel Brishusa Nechtovim, she's written, the Ksuba was written while she was in his jurisdiction, and since the Ksuba was written in his jurisdiction, therefore the Ksuba is considered hers. The Pnei Yeshua discusses according to Rabbanon, that the ksuba is belongs to the according to Rabbanan, that the ksuba belongs to the girl if she already became a nesua. Even though the ksuba was written while she was under the jurisdiction of the father, he says it's very hard to understand, because the Rabbanan of the first mission of our parak say that we look at shas gvia, and therefore the Mishnah said that even if the father died prior to the actual collection of the knas, it still belongs to him. So we see the Rabbanan are the man, the Omrim, that hold that the father's rights are very strong. Yet here, the Rabbanan, in disagreement with Rabbi Yehuda, hold that the rights of the girl are stronger than the father. So the Pnei Yeshua explains that we can't bring a right from knas to ksuba, because the entire point of the ksuba is only to be given after the marriage terminates, where she's no longer is in the father's jurisdiction, and therefore it belongs to her. Ask the Gemara Migva Be'emiskavya. And there are many Pshatim in the Rishonim and the Achronim how to explain this Gemara. The way most Rishonim explain the Gemara is like this. Apparently, by Erisin, the Ksuba was written, the Ksuba was not necessarily written. But the Ksuba doesn't necessarily have to be written. There's a Tanai Bezdin that a Ksuba, that every girl is entitled to the Ksuba. Then, traditionally, the ksuba was actually written by the nesuin. We know that if somebody obligates himself to someone else, there's a lien on his property. So the question is, from when is the lien that initiated based on the ksuba? From when does there a lien on his property? Amrav Huna, Monam Simon Arison. The basic ksuba's lien begins by the erisin, but if there's any toisus ksuba, if the husband wanted to give her more, that begins by the nesuin. For Rav Asiyam Echazev Echazev Nesuin, they both begin, they're only collectible from properties from the nesuin. Ask the Gemara Miyam Rav Huna Hachi, does Rav Huna hold that it's collectible already from the time of Erisin? Vitmar, we learned in a Braisa, Hatzi Allah Shtei Ksubis, if the wife produced against the husband two Ksubis. Achash HaMasayim V'achash HaSholosh Meis. One Ksuba is a Ksuba for 200 Zuz, one Ksuba is a Ksuba of 300 Zuz. Vam Rav Huna, says Rav Huna, Basa Ligvis Masayim, if she wants to take the lower ksuba, the ksuba of only 200 zuz, Goyvim is man rishin, she collects from the date written in the first ksuba. Sholosh Meis, if she wants to collect the ksuba of 300 zuz, Goyvim is man sheni, she can collect. You know, there's an advantage and a disadvantage in every one. If she collects from the first ksuba, it's a smaller amount, but she has a longer time. Because let's say the husband sold off properties between the dates of the first and the second ksuba. If she's going to collect the second ksuba, she doesn't have a lien on the properties that were sold in that time. On the other hand, if she collects from the first ksuba, her lien begins earlier, but it's a small amount. Now, Vim Isa, if what Rav Huna said is correct, that she collects the basis ksuba from the time of Erisin, and the extra from the time of the, from the date in the ksuba, Tigvim Asayim is Man Rishin, why don't we allow to cast the 200 from the date in the first ksuba, and the extra 100, Mizman Sheni, from the date written in the second ksuba? Says the Gemara, if you're going to follow that reasoning, Utameich, Tigve Chamesh Meis Kulm, she should be allowed to collect 500 zuz. Masai Mizman Rishon, 200 from the first, Talasmei, and another 300, Mizman Sheni. El Chamesh Meis Mai Tamaloi Gavya, why are we not saying that? Because Kivin Doi Kosovo, since the second ksuba does not read, Savisiva Sifis Loch Tlasmaya Amasayim, that I'm adding 300 on top of the original 200, what it's saying instead is, Hach Kamla, Imizman Rishon, if you want to go from the earlier date, Gavis Gavin Asayim, you have an advantage, you have an earlier lien, but you're only entitled to 200 zuz. In the other, Imizman Sheni Gavis, if you want to collect from the later date, and that gives you a shorter lien, but you only give it to me, you only be entitled to 300. Here too, this is the reason why she doesn't collect the 200 from the date of the first ksuba and 100 from the date of the second ksuba, because since he did not write in to the ksuba, this loshin of the sifaloch meyah masayim, I'm adding 100 on top of the 200. It's a raya, achule achlasei l'shtei l'shibu the kama. What he meant is to relinquish the first lien and give her a choice to choose whichever one he wants. There's an interesting shaila that the Rishonim point out. While Rabbi Halacha, Al-Gemar referred to a situation that the first ksuba was 200 and the second ksuba was 300, and was saying is he's giving her a choice. What do you want? But while Rabbi Halacha, if the first ksuba was 300, was 300, and the second ksuba is 200, is that a clear proof that he was trying to add onto the second ksuba? Because nobody's going to take only bid that get a later date and a lesser amount. So there it's a clear proof that he was trying to add to the first ksuba. Or do we still view them as two separate ksubas, and she does not have a right to collect a total of 500?